Council, Alan Raskin, Council Jersey, Council Angel.
Good morning, may it please the Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Jeremy Flax. I represent Mr. Manu, the appellant in this matter, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal. Given that I've had the benefit of listening to the last half hour of argument, I'm going to start by presenting what I think is the answer to the question before you in the starkest terms. If the Virginia legislature had the power to require uninsured motorist carriers to handle and adjust claims in good faith, then the appellant wins.
Can I ask you this? In Midwest, we made this statement. Under the statute, the obligation of the uninsured motorist insurer arises only if it is determined that the insured is legally entitled to recover damages from the owner or operator of the uninsured motor vehicle, .. Judgment is the event which determines legal entitlement to recovery. Have we reversed that? And if so, where?
If the legislature has the power to require uninsured motorists...
My question is, have we reversed that statement in Midwest? Because I believe I read it verbatim.
No, because there's been no case this court asking the question that's being asked today. No,
that
case
is true. It's a different case, but this is a principle that appears to exist across many cases because it's not tied to a context.
With all due respect, I believe that's incorrect.
Okay, explain why.
The legislature has changed the landscape. If the legislature has the power to require uninsured motorist carriers to adjust claims in good faith, then the landscape has changed from the 1980s and the 1970s, and all the cases relied upon by GEICO, frankly, are out the window. We have a new statute. It's a new day.
What's the claim? Just somebody asking for some money?
The claim is an injury, notification to your insurance company of damage, and the right to have it adjusted fairly.
Under a UM policy, when is there injury which the insurance company is responsible for?
Under the new statute, the minute you notify them that you're injured and you send them a letter.
Where does it say that?
The statute says that they now have to adjust claims in good faith.
Right, but then the question becomes one of a claim, and I thought you were saying a claim is when you're entitled to get money from the insurance company.
I didn't say that. I said a claim is when...
You ask the insurance company for some money.
The claim is when you're injured and you submit notification of damage, notification of injury to your insurance company.
Do you have any authority for that definition?
Well, the definition of a claim is set forth, Your Honor, in my brief on page 21. Using Black's Law Dictionary, a claim is an aggregate of operative facts giving rise to a right enforceable by a court. Number two, the assertion of an existing right. Or three, a demand for money or property to which one asserts a right. And that's what I'm saying triggers the duty of good faith if you're going to give any power and effect to what the legislature enacted. Otherwise, the legislation that we're here before today means nothing. And the court would have to read out the entire legislative history where the committees went to great pains to explain that they were very concerned about how insurance companies were handling first-party claims. Now, if the legislature had no right...
UM claims are not first-party claims, though, right?
I'm sorry?
UM claims are not first-party claims,
they absolutely are,
they? Are
first-party claims.
Okay. Explain that.
They come under... They originate from your policy as the insurer. And nor are they excluded in any way, shape, or form by this legislation. The legislation is sweeping. It says that when an insurance company fails to handle a claim of its insured in good faith, there is a remedy. There is a remedy. That includes
let me ask you a question, if I might.
All first party claims.
If the judgment in the case is below the limits, there is no uninsured or underinsured claim, correct?
Correct.
Well, it seems to me, and I want to give you the opportunity to dissect this, it seems to me that what you're saying simply is that a claim includes I might have a claim.
The claim is a set of operative facts giving rise to a potential judgment in your favor.
So a claim includes I might have a claim.
You could say it that way. I wouldn't, but yes, you could. I'd use the definition I read from Black's Law Dictionary.
But you gave us three different definitions.
All three indicate more or less the same thing. There's an injury and notification to your carrier that you are asserting a right to recovery of damages for that injury. Because this is limited to motor vehicle accidents.
Because I might have a claim.
Because you might have a claim.
I don't want to make this too simple and unfair, but I think that's what you're saying, that the word claim means I might have a claim.
You might have a judgment. You do have a claim. That claim may write into a judgment.
Well, see, the problem is you don't have a claim until you have a judgment, unless you artfully define claim as including I might have a claim.
Well, it's a claim. You're just asking the insurance policy to pay under the policy, as opposed to a claim in a court of law for recovery.
A claim is a set of operative facts giving rise to damage. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. And the legislature decided that once that happens, that claim has to be adjusted in good faith.
But see, you don't have damages if the judgment is within policy limits. There's no damage.
Well, there would be no bad faith claim.
Well, there's no uninsured or underinsured claim, and consequently no damages if the judgment is within the policy limits.
That's correct.
So I think the dilemma for me is and I don't think it's just semantic. I think these words really mean something. And your definition, which I don't quarrel with you making the definition. I'm just not sure that it's required under the statute. What you're saying is that a claim includes I may have a claim, and you back into it with a definition that presupposes that there is a damage. And I don't know that you can presuppose there's a damage under the policy because you haven't had the judgment yet, and you don't know whether it's below the cover.
Justice Lemons, I'm only using the words the legislature used. I'm only parroting the language of the statute that in its wisdom it decided was going to control these claims.
Do it again. Tell me the words the legislature used that supports a claim is
B1, Your Honor. Whenever a court of proper jurisdiction finds that an insurance company licensed in this commonwealth to write insurance, as defined in 38.2-124, denies, refuses, or fails to pay to its insured a claim, I'm only using the word the legislature uses, of more than $3,500 in excess of the deductible, if any, under the provisions of a policy of motor vehicle insurance issued by such company to the insured, and a court of proper jurisdiction
finds
acceptable.
But your definition of claim actually included the word damages. That's what you just said in response to Justice Goodwin.
Correct, because he asked me for the definition of a claim.
Okay, well, let's start right there. If it includes damages, you're not damaged unless the judgment exceeds the coverage.
But the statute is designed to require good faith handling of claims once they're submitted to the insurance company. If it turns out that your claim never ripens into a UM or UIM claim, then there will never be a litigation requiring bad faith. But the legislature doesn't want the insurance companies to handle these claims in bad faith because some of them may never ripen into a UM or UIM claim. The legislature wants to protect the citizens of this commonwealth.
But I think the thing that the dialogue between the bench and you at this point, that we're talking past each other. Because if claims just means I call up the insurance adjuster and ask for money, and that's it. It means nothing more than that. I might win one day, I might not. It doesn't really matter. I think I'm going to win, and I'm not making it up. That definition wipes out a huge conceptual point, which is, wait a minute, I thought it was claims under the policy. Not claims in the ether, it's claims under the policy. The policy has duties, and it has provisions, and we have to look to see if there is a claim under the policy. If the claim under the policy is first-party med pay, no-brainer. You should pay a reasonable amount. I don't need to go to court to get my med pay. If it's first party, my house burned down and you owe me money on the house, no brainer. Pay me a reasonable amount for the house. If my claim is under the UM provision of the policy, then we have to go to a completely different statute, 38.2206A. And that is the first question I asked you, and I'm still struggling to find out if you have an answer. That requires a predicate to be established. And that is that there is a undertaking to pay someone who is legally entitled to recover, to enforce. That is force someone to pay. You're not allowed to force someone to pay before a court says you are. Why isn't that the Achilles heel of this argument for you? Just explain that last point for me.
Because you don't go back to a statute enacted dozens or decades before a remedial statute and use that as the starting point.
Okay, help me out. This statute is a statute that requires language to be put into the policy. We're not talking about just a statute. We're talking about language in a policy, a contract, that's required to be there by law. And we've defined the very term. And we've said the very term we're talking about means a judgment.
Well, no, there's case law that says it doesn't mean a judgment. There's
okay, I read
Dawson and Rainey, both of which say it means a potential claim or a right to make a claim. So the case law is far from uniform in that respect. But regardless, you don't need to go back to those cases. As of 1991, there's a new law on the books. Either it means what it says or it doesn't. It doesn't require you to go to 38.2-2206. Either it means these claims have to be handled in good faith or it doesn't. That's what it says. The legislative history is uniform. There's no doubt about that. So unless the legislature did not have the power to enact that particular statute, then the appellant wins.
You had wanted to save some time.
I did.
You may use your time any way you want to, though.
I'll save my time.
All right.
Thank you.
Please, the court, Alan Rashkind, along with Michael Joshi, on behalf of GEICO Casualty, which hereinafter conveniently will be referred to as GEICO. The admonition from the Chief Justice not to repeat what was argued was heard. It is assumed that admonition includes not repeating the excellent questions from the bench, which support our position. I would just say that our brief makes the point that 66.1D doesn't create a duty, it creates a remedy for breach of duty. Where do you look for the duty? You look for the duty in a UM case to the UM statute, and that's, of course, 38.2206. In answer to the question, no, Midwest Mutual versus Aetna has never been, never. To the suggestion that Aetna versus Dodson or Rainey somehow reverse it, not so. A year after Aetna versus Dodson, this court in State Farm versus Kelly said again, quoting from Midwest Mutual, that's what we said, that's what we mean. Years later in Rainey, a declaratory judgment where the issue was whether or not the former operator of a vehicle who was taking a flat tire some distance from the vehicle was an uninsured operator within the meaning of the statute. Had nothing to do with whether or not judgment could be obtained against him. The issue was he was an operator. The insurer lost on that. He was deemed to be within the reach of the statute. Rainey said nothing to over to overrule Midwest Mutual or Midwest Mutual or State Farmers. Kelly. It just, and in fact, also in William versus Newport News, this court even cited Aetna versus Dodson as being in accord with Midwest Mutual. So that that issue is beyond argument, I submit. It is also beyond argument that the General Assembly had the power to create a duty to adjust claims in good faith, but it did not do so. Not in 8.01, 66.1D with respect to UM, nor in 38.2, 2206. And that's critical, the absence of any change to 2206. In USA versus Nationwide at 218 Virginia, this court said, and I'm quoting, there is a basic difference between the duty of the liability insurer and that of an uninsured motorist carrier. The liability carrier has the duty to defend the insured and to exercise good faith to settle meritorious claims within policy limits, an undertaking which is not required of the uninsured motorist carrier. Now, if the General Assembly wanted to change, wanted to reverse this court's ruling to that effect, it knows where to find 38.2-2206. It may be among the most frequently amended code sections. It seems lately to have been amended almost every other year. But the virtually the one thing that's been unchanged is the requirement of legal liability of the uninsured or underinsured tortfeasor. And that statute gets tinkered with constantly, but never has it been changed so as to impose a duty. And as the court's questions point out, it is the statute which mandates the very contract. In fact, when you look at the UM endorsement, you will see the standard Virginia UM endorsement actually refers to 38.2-2206. That sets out what the carrier and what the insured can and cannot, must and must not do, cannot arbitrate. The insurer cannot require cooperation, anything more than what the code requires in terms of notice. The obligations, the duties of the parties are set out there. The General Assembly knows where that statute lies. It knows to amend it if it wishes to add or subtract duties. It has not done so. Yes, it has the power to do so, but it did not do so, and it did not do so in 66.1.
Counsel?
Counsel? Yes, yes, sir.
8.01, 66.1 is a remedial statute, is it not?
It is.
And it is therefore to be construed liberally.
That's correct.
Does the liberality principle apply to the word claim, which is undefined?
In this context, I would say no, because the statute, although to be construed liberally, can't be read to do things it doesn't do. So the statute says there will be a remedy for bad faith refusal to pay claims.
Okay, so how would you define claims within the context of an undefined term that's included in a statute that we are to interpret liberally?
To the extent that 66.1D applies at all to uninsured motorist claims, and we argue that it does not, but assuming that it does, with respect to the mandate of 38.2-2206, a claim for purposes of uninsured motorist coverage is a judgment against an uninsured motorist because that is the event which triggers the liability. And without it, there is none.
Okay, thank you.
In terms of the plain language, 801.66.1 talks about the company is liable to the insured in the amount otherwise due and payable. So in the hypothetical earlier, your house burns down, well then you don't have to go to court and get a judgment that's due and payable. But with a UM, UIM, you just don't know what's going to be. So does that phrase yield a clue as to legislation, or am I over-reading that?
No, I think it does. We think it does provide another clue that, in my view, suggests it doesn't even apply to UM. But if it does, it requires a judgment. I will also point out that with respect to this particular claim, and I realize the court has before it the Commonwealth jurisprudence, with respect to the particular claim we're dealing with here, the prayer for damages in the complaint did not seek the amount otherwise due under the policy, but rather that amount which was left unpaid when the judgment, when the insurance carriers had already paid the amount of the judgment left unpaid. So the ad damnum in the complaint is inconsistent with the plain language of 66.1D.
Unless you interpret it to include inchoate claims.
I suppose, even if that's the term that you use to define claim,
right.
Still what was asked for in the complaint is not what the statute says you get to recover.
Right. I had the colloquy with counsel. I mean, it appears that you have to get to I have a claim means I may have a claim in addition to I do have a claim.
I would agree with your analysis. Right. And again, it is not a question of whether or not the General Assembly has the power to create a duty to adjust claims. And when I'm talking about adjust, I'm using the assignment of error of the complainant in my case. The General Assembly did not create that duty, and nothing in 66.1 creates a duty to adjust claims. In fact, 66.1D talks about refusal to pay or denial of a claim, and doesn't talk about adjusting the claim.
May I interrupt you there? Seemingly, I think, omitted from a lot of our exchanges is it doesn't just say claim. It doesn't say throw the word claim out and try to put a dictionary definition on it. It's claims under the policy provisions, the literal language, under the provisions of a policy. So it's not just I want the insurance company to pay me. It's got to be an insurance company I'm making a claim under my policy. So that's what requires us to determine whether or not this is a homeowner policy or a third-party policy or a MedPay policy provision or a UM-UIM policy. So the argument's been made on the other side of the case of you is we can't even go to the policy and look at the very provision that creates the duty. That's not relevant because claims is... It's not so much ethereal claims or potential claims, as their argument is the claim doesn't have to be attached to any policy duty, period.
And I, of course I agree that a claim under the policy, a policy mandated, dictated, and controlled by 38.2.2206.
So if it's a claim not on a policy provision, by its own terms, it's not a claim within the bad faith statute.
I agree. Also, I point out the argument was that the General Assembly wants if there's no judgment in excess of the underinsured limit, or if there's no judgment against an uninsured motorist, then there'd be no bad faith. But well prior, if this court allows the remedy that the plaintiffs argue, then well prior to that judgment date, there will be back and forth negotiation of the alleged bad faith claim. I submit the General Assembly has the power to enact legislation requiring good faith adjustment of UM claims. It has declined to do so. If the court has additional questions, I will do my best to answer them. Otherwise, we'll rely upon the arguments we've already made, especially those on brief as well. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Thank you, Justice Thomas. The argument made by Mr. Manu is not that the claim is hanging out there in the ether, but instead it's a claim under the motor vehicle policy of insurance issued to him by his insurance company, GEICO. If I didn't make that clear before, I want to make it clear now.
What provision of the policy creates the duty?
The statute. The remedial statute.
What about this?
If it doesn't, then we lose. I agree. If it doesn't, we lose. I'm sorry.
I asked a question to your opposing counsel about your liable and the amount otherwise due and payable. Does that factor into our reading of legislative intent?
I don't think so. The remedy the insured in this case would be looking for the cost to litigate a claim that wasn't handled in good faith, the attorney fees, and the interest of double the judgment rate. There could be other circumstances that come up where the amount otherwise due and payable is relevant. I don't see that immediately as being one of the damages we would claim. But make no mistake, the damages that I just outlined are very important and very significant and would go a long way to preventing bad faith handling of uninsured motorist claims. Again, I point out that the arguments by GEICO and the trial court that a judgment is required finds no support anywhere in this statute. So that would have to be something that this court, to find against the appellant, would have to read into the language of this remedial statute, which instead of using the word judgment, which it could have used, the legislature used the words claim, a claim under a motor vehicle insurance policy. And it clearly cross-references to uninsured motorist coverage by the reference to 38.2-124, which unambiguously incorporates by reference uninsured motorist coverage. I understand the issue that has been presented is a difficult one, but I think if you go to the remedial nature of this statute and look at decisions that this court has handed down, particularly, I lost the cite to the case, but where the liberal construction is required and how expansive that should be to provide a remedy for what the legislature found was mischief, then I think that the appellant wins. And Mr. Manu asks that this court vacate the judgment of the trial court and send this case back for discovery, which was pending at the time the demur was sustained.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for your argument. The court will be in recess until 11:30, and we will resume the docket then.
All right.